This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Monday.
Hey, it is Monday.
Brent's back.
And Brent is back.
Oh,
hopefully my guest host did a superior job, but just not better than me. Right? So I could be seeing the boss and getting fired.
It was close. He does want to meet with us after. So,
hey, it's Monday, folks. This is Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne. You're listening to Newsmakers. And I was off last week on a very special trip. And I want to appreciate TJ Sullivan, our citizen extraordinaire here in town, and my good friend TJ Sullivan for fitting in. And of course, Denise. Denise, I'm sure she's always great, and I'm sure you KYKN avid listeners were happy to hear from Denise as well, and the guests that joined them, and the mayor.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, it was fun. So you can carry forth without me, but it's nice to be back, and happy Monday to everybody.
Yeah.
Hope you're enjoying it more than Dave is.
Mondays. So, just, I don't know what the deal is.
And yes, actually, Dave, my trip was great.
Good.
It was great. So
I did ask you about it earlier. That's all you said was it was great. So I know you did a special thing with your son.
Yeah, my son graduated from Oregon State University with a degree in engineering week before last. Went to graduation. Mm-hmm. Proud of him. I don't think I could have taken all those math and physics classes. I could have taken them. I just wouldn't have passed them.
Right? I wouldn't have either.
So anyway, he graduated and we did a little father and son trip. And everyone's like, well, what are you doing with your son? And I said, oh, we're going on a trip. Oh, you're going to take him to someplace fun? Yeah, we're going to Ohio. Ohio? That's his graduation present? You know, I'm like, yeah, well, you know, as you frequent Newsmaker listeners know, we are a baseball family and baseball fans, and he grew up a baseball fan. And so we hit three MLB ballparks, the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Nice.
And the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 5 days.
Nice.
So he is a bundle of energy at 23 years old, does not like to be bored, folks. He does not like to be bored. So we, flew to Cincinnati, saw the Reds play. We're thinking about hiring ourselves out. So we saw the Reds play in the Great American Ballpark, spectacular park, right? Mm-hmm. Cincinnati. They won.
And, nice.
Yeah, in walk-off fashion, very exciting. Hit the Pro Football Hall of Fame, drove to Canton, drove to Cleveland. You know, if it was on the West Coast, we always forget how close some of these cities are.
Yeah.
You know, like Cleveland's not that far from Detroit, and it's not that far from Pittsburgh and all these things. So anyway, saw the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame the next day and then went to the ballpark game that night. Fantastic weather, and the Indians won.
Wow.
Indians won. And fireworks, just like they had the Volcano Stadium last Friday. Last Friday, Cleveland Indians had fireworks. So sorry, Volcanoes, for having missed the first homestand. But, you know, I was out watching the MLB. And then the next day, we drove to Pittsburgh, caught a 4 p.m. game at PNC Park. And it was a spectacular day. And Pirates won.
Wow, you must be good.
We're
luck.
Lucky charms, right? Yeah. So, yeah, yesterday, it's a miracle of modern transportation that yesterday morning I woke up in Pittsburgh, and here we are at Newsmakers in Salem today. So it's nice to be back. And, folks, what the heck did you let happen in the legislature this week while I was gone?
So much happened.
Oh, my gosh. All these things happening in the House. However, the Senate is at this stalemate because the Republicans aren't showing up, right?
Right.
So, wow, that is a pickle. And we promised you, we're going to find somebody, either a lobbyist like NFIB, we can get Anthony Smith back, or we can get one of our local representatives to come back to really put into perspective how much more revenue the Democrats are passing this session in as a ratio of how much revenue they already had, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's almost like they want another 10, 25% more than they already have. And that is a big bump, right? That's the thing.
Yeah.
Just put it in scale, folks.
Okay.
So three Republicans are walking out in the Senate. And there are three perspectives I thought of in terms of how you're feeling about these senators walking out. What's your perspective?
Well, my perspective is they're not left with very many tools to fight this. Because if they're there, then there's a quorum, and then the supermajority Democrats can just pass anything they want. So these guys had to use their last tool to leave and not give a quorum so that they can't just ram this down our throat after they did the $1 billion tax.
Yeah, billion per year.
Per year. Yeah. Per year tax, yeah. They tried that with that. They kind of got a compromise on it, but it's still passed.
Yeah, and those compromises are a bit of a saving face joke, folks, because, you know, anything that wasn't passed that they want passed, they're going to pass in February.
They're going to try.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, and I don't think we're going to get any change in the ratio of Democrats to Republicans in February. All right, so this perspective one, they've got this desperation tool, and they need to utilize it, right? That's the only tool they got. They got to walk out, leave the state, and just to prevent this. And actually, it hits national news.
It did.
And it gets to the height of people's consciousness, what's really going on, right, in terms of this tax and what it's going to cost. And people who may not otherwise have been paying attention are suddenly like, what the heck? And then they're going to read the articles or see the news stories. And it's going to heighten, certainly, public pressure in that awareness aspect, right?
It's already going around on Facebook. I shared it as well. On average, for a four-person family here in Oregon, it's going to cost you an extra $600 a year if they pass the cap and trade. Now, my friend said, who is in the remodeling business, he said, that's an average. Just think if they were trying to remodel your home and all those contractors were paying the cap and trade as well, it'll make everything you do cost more.
Yeah. I mean, everything that has to do with energy, right?
Yeah, like it's going to triple a remodel.
Driving to work. Okay.
Yeah.
So
and driving to work.
Perspective number two.
Okay.
It's their duty. They were elected. They need to show up and take their lumps. I get it. I mean, I think there's Republicans and Democrats that would have that perspective. It's like, go and vote. You're not there to be a petulant baby and walk out because you're not getting your way. You need to go. You need to be one of 30 votes and get your way or not get your way. So it is your duty to represent your vote and to be present because it's holding up, and we'll talk about this in the next segment, it's holding up a lot of other bills and some Republican bills. Because they're not there and it passed the House and they need to make them law. So it's their duty, perspective two. Okay.
All right. I can't wait to hear three after the break.
Yeah. After the break, really? You want to tease? You want to hang them on? I think.
Oh, how long will it take you to explain it?
I'm in the perspective three camp.
Okay.
So my perspective is show up, vote no, and let the Democrats hang themselves.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Because, you know, we've been talking about it on Newsmakers, to show up, you let them pass every tax they possibly can, and then you count it up and you hammer it at the ballot. You hammer it as a campaign issue, and you change the ratio of representation at the big house. Because let them hang themselves. When people start adding up, oh, the $2 a pack cigarettes, and the cap and trade, and this, and that, and this, and that. It's like, let's add it up as a ratio of what the government, and then put it in perspective, folks, like, hey, they're operating on a $20 bill and they all got together this year and decided they needed 20 plus five. Does that seem out of scale, folks, there?
A little bit.
Whoa. Let's let them overreach so we can have the snapback. I mean,
how easy is it to repeal something like that, though?
Well, it's not going to be easy. Unless you get a supermajority going the other way.
See?
Or even just a majority going the other way.
But
right?
Even then, it's not a guarantee that it'll go away.
Yeah. Well, let's hope the voters have an opportunity to vote on it and send it back. All right. We're going to take a break. We'll talk about this and how it connects with other bills that might even be important to people who are right of center and are sponsored by Republicans. I'm Brent, and this is Dave, and you are listening to 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back, folks. It's Monday. I'm Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and you're listening to Newsmakers, and we are talking about the Republican senators walkout and how many different perspectives there are and what they really should be doing, how to solve this crisis having to do with doing the business of the state, but not allowing the cap and trade bill to go through, which we know it's going to go through as soon as the Republicans show up, they have a quorum, and a vote is taken, and all Democrat votes will count a yay, and that'll carry the day.
Well, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, they don't have Betty.
Well,
Betsy Johnson. Sorry, Betsy Johnson.
Yeah, but maybe they won't vote for it if they get enough backlash of how bad the bill is. What do you think?
I think not likely.
Okay. Well, I'm being hopeful.
Yeah, that's very optimistic of you. Nice.
Thank you.
We've got Frank on the phone. He's going to give us perhaps a fourth perspective. Let's hear what Frank has to say about the Republican walkout in the Senate. Hey, Frank, you with us?
Yes.
What are your thoughts?
My whole perspective on this, I'm with the Republicans walking out and staying out until the Democrats, they just have to remove one thing. And then, like you said, you know, when the Republicans come back, it's going to be voted in. Mm-hmm. They have to remove that emergency clause.
Yes.
Because that is the worst thing on this. They're denying the people, us, to put a ballot measure up and saying, no, we don't want this. And that's why they put it in there. They put this emergency clause, it seems like, on every bill, every crazy bill, which is most of their bills, every bill, so we can't vote it. We can't vote against it. It's just them, and they purport to be for the people. They're representing us. Well, if they're representing us, they'd at least give us a voice in it, and that would be to put a ballot measure out there and kill it, because once it gets in, especially with the emergency clause, even like you said a minute ago, if the Republicans, you know, give enough line to the Democrats to hang themselves, well, with us being kind of Democrat-controlled state, their people are all for this. And, you know, all for this cap and tax is all it is.
It's right.
More ways for them to get more money in the House or you know, in the state government and everything. So if it was to pass as is with that emergency clause and we can't kill it mm-hmm. by a ballot measure, then it's going to stay.
Even if
the Republicans got back in control, because there's enough Republicans that would say, oh, yeah, well, we do need this cap and trade, you know, and it's... No, I would say the odds are about a million to one.
Well,
that it'd ever die.
Yeah, it is. I'm sorry, Frank. It is. If it's legislative in nature, then the public can't overturn it with an initiative process. We may not be able to do it with a referral process, where every new tax can be referred if you get a certain number of signatures and you have a chief petitioner and you can refer it, like we anticipate is happening. With the $1 billion Student Success Act,
right?
$2 billion, really. But yeah, then I'm right with you, Frank. That emergency clause is so overused. It's overused at the city level. It's overused at the state level. They just want it to go into effect right now and not have time. Sometimes they don't even have time to implement, you know, and administer what's going to change. Yeah, I'm with you, Frank.
From what I understand with this emergency clause, we can't even get a ballot measure.
See, that's wrong.
Well,
every new tax proposed, no matter what it is, should not be able to have an emergency clause on it, because there's no emergency for a tax ever, and then we all get to vote on it.
Yeah.
We'll try to get a Politico in here to clarify this, but I think that any legislative action... no matter how old, whether it's brand new or 100 years old, doesn't matter. A law can be changed by the people through the initiative process.
Yes.
There's a referral process where they're going to refer, say, this bill, right? This bill, the cap and trade bill. Can we refer it and put it on hold? That's one thing. But if it just gets enacted, you know, and once a bill is enacted, it's legislative and it's the law, the public can change it through an initiative process.
Yeah. Well, that's the clarification then that we need, is once that emergency clause, because what I've read and heard other people say, once that emergency clause is on a bill and it gets passed, it's a done deal. Nothing can be done to stop it at a later date, whether it's through, you know, I agree the referral aspect, it definitely, they do that, so there's not enough time to get a referral in there, you know, to get something out there to the voters. But I thought that emergency clause was kind of a double-edged sword. It stopped the referral, and it stopped us from getting ballot measures out later on.
Hmm. And then they were trying to change the rules. And again, on top of that, emergency clause and change the rules to make it more difficult to gather signatures.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know about you. I've gotten my petition in the mail already. Said sign here, you know, for the referrals. And to collect the signatures. And they're saying you can't do that online. I know it's just suddenly it's emergency that you're not going to allow people to have signatures online, but you could before. And that's just dirty pool, folks.
Yes. Thank you, Frank.
And it's cheap.
We become a fascist state, really, with the governor and all the Democrats. You know, it's their way or the highway. They think they know what everybody wants and what everybody needs. And we can't say a word. We say a word and they say, oh, geez, you know, you guys are wacko or whatever. And that's what they're doing with the Republican, the senators, you know.
Yeah, if you disagree with them, clearly you're a racist, bigot, ignorant person. So,
right.
Anyway,
and you can't, you know, you don't have any brains. So, and they won't even listen to the senators because they tried to get just a couple little things. The emergency clause was one of the other things. They kind of tried to get just a couple little things on this bill, and the Democrats shot them down. But they says, "Oh no, we listened to them." Yeah, for about a half a second. And then he shut him down.
We listened and we said no. Frank, I appreciate the call. Thank you very much for calling us here on Newsmakers KYKN. With your perspective and the Republicans walking out, Frank brings up a very good point. And I've got this sketch down on my pad. We're going to have to wait till after the break. But it's we talk a lot about this, about perspective, about the lenses they look through when they're looking at life and governance. And the difference we'll talk about after the break, in addition to the bills that Republicans want passed, is how Democrats feel like they're working on behalf of the people. But to Frank's point, they're not really working for the people. Those prepositions and more when we get back.
We have 4 minutes.
Time. Let's talk about that.
We also have Greg on the phone here. But before we get to him, I heard the best line from a protester that was at the Capitol yesterday. He said, you know, the legislatures in the Capitol, they're supposed to represent all of Oregon, not just Portland.
And not just the not just Portland, not just the Democrats.
Exactly.
And so to Frank's point, he's talking about all people don't want it, but they think they know better.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to tell you what's good for you. And so in their perspective of governance, they're working on behalf of the people. Uh-huh. They know better, and they're going to be paternalistic and maternalistic, and they're going to work on your behalf. But if you tell them that's not what you want, that doesn't matter. They're not working for you, right?
Right.
They're not working for you. So if I believe, if I'm a representative and I believe this one thing, but all of my constituents tell me that's not what we want from our government, then you are compelled to vote no. You should be.
You should be.
But they're not. All right. Who we got online?
Hello, Greg.
Hey, Greg. You with us? What do you got for us
today? I'm with you. Well, my point is you guys make a lot of great points, and all the protests that we do, that's all great. But even if we took over both chambers of the legislature and we had the governorship, that's not going to fix the problem because we don't need more laws. The problem that I see is we already have enough laws and nobody's enforcing the law. And so there's already clear violations from Kate Brown and the legislature. Nobody's stepping up to enforce the law. My point being, we have federal law that says it's against law to have illegals here. We have federal law that says it's against marijuana. And then when we bring those points up, our governor says, well, I'm sorry, but we're a sovereign state, and this is what the voters of Oregon want. And so they run behind that. But yet, the voters also voted to deny driver's licenses for illegals. They voted for the death penalty. They voted to have the kicker tax rebate, and then they just flat out says, "Nope, we're not going to obey the law." And so my point is what good does it do to have any laws when the laws of the land are being broken now? And it seems like our courts and our law enforcement aren't doing anything because for the last 40 years, the Democrats have run the state, and so they have managed to put their judges and into positions of power, and along with all the other bureaucracies, and we have a very corrupt court system. And so, until we address actually enforcing the laws we have, I don't see it getting any better.
Yeah, good point.
And I like your points on what we vote on. Mm-hmm. And I mean, and your list was great list, and it was missing gross receipts tax. We just voted it down. So now they get the supermajority. I'm like, well, we don't have to listen to Republicans, and we don't have to listen to the voters. We need a gross receipts tax. So we're going to rename it corporate activities tax, even though it has nothing to do with corporations
right.
or anything. And it's still activities tax without regard to whether or not a company is profitable. They're just going to tax them because they have economic activity. Whoa, economic activity, like it's a bad thing, people.
Right.
That is kind of what they should be encouraging.
They should be encouraging that. Thank you, Greg.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate the call. 503-393-1430 if you ever want to call in and join the conversation and get your perspective in while I'm sharing mine. 393-1430. I'm in the perspective that the Republicans can just show up. That emergency cause. Make one last ditch to get rid of it,
and
then make it a campaign issue. Just start tallying it up. So was it Greg or Frank who said, well, that's the way what the Democrats want, how the voters, and then we live in this one-party state. However, there are a lot of independents. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people that people conceive of or perceive as being Republicans or conservative in nature, and they're independents. Independents sway elections. And you get the independents to start to see an overreach, they'll start to consider something else. We can at least hope. Right?
Yes, I hope.
With the overreach, with the swinging too hard and too far for too far offenses, folks, back to the baseball analogy, maybe they will hang themselves and we'll see a pendulum swing in politics in Oregon.
Maybe.
All right. Hey, we're going to go back to, we'll come back after the break and talk about some bills that are languishing out there because the senators aren't there to push them through. All right. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN.
Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by the fine folks at Color Tile of Salem and Sylvan Learning Center. That's so good to have you back. I missed you, Brent.
Oh, nice.
I know you had a good time. I had a good time with the guest host, but it's always nice to have you back.
Thank you. That's awfully nice of you. It's nice to be back and rant about a few things. And that perspective thing and what lenses people look through, I know that's really important. And sometimes it's one of the reasons if you have a group, you have a legislature, it's nice to have people from different walks of life, right?
Yes.
And not
all
just
around.
Listen to, perhaps the union perspective, what happened. Mm-hmm. But we were talking about this when it comes to the kicker. And their perspective is, wow, we could do great things with that money. Wow, we could do great things with the money. It's like you watch somebody drop their wallet on the sidewalk and you see a bunch of cash coming out of it and you think, wow, I could make my next car payment with that. Or you can pick it up and say, hey, mister, you dropped this is your money.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah.
And here we have the kicker. And the Democrats look at their perspective of the world is that's the government's money and the government can do so many great things. You know, I want to take that money and spend it on your behalf, right? Then there's the perspective, it never was your money. It's not your money. You didn't budget for it. You didn't pay in. You know, it's like that is the taxpayer's money. That's, which is the perspective clearly I've got. It's like
clearly,
but it's the same
but
thing.
But that's the truth, though. It's the taxpayer's money.
But they could do so many great things with that money. They could pay for this. They could pay for that. They could put in reserve. They could work on behalf of. So there's the perspective. And it's just a preposition, folks, in that phrase. Are they working on your behalf? Or are they working for you?
Yeah. You know, the perspective for me, if the government was actually a private run entity, it would have been out of business long, long ago.
Yes, they were not going to survive. All right, so without the senators showing up, the 11 senators who are Republicans showing up to do business, you've got 18 Democrats who are showing up. There's not enough votes there to pass the bills. But according to an article in Salem Reporter, there are 67 bills that have passed the House already. And most all of them with bipartisan support.
Okay.
So they've passed the House. They had some Republican colleagues in the House pass them, and they will not get passed unless the if the Republicans do what they've threatened to do, is not show up until after the session has to end.
But then what if they call that special session they've been talking about?
That's just the thing. It's like, is this tactic effective? I think it is effective in getting public awareness. So
sure.
I'll give them that. Really raising the stakes for Democrats that people are really looking at what you're doing. This is how important it is. So I'll give them that. But really, they're just, you know, the governor can call a special session. You could not show up to that.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're not going to show up on February 1st because this thing's going to pass. It's going to pass.
They need to hold out to get that emergency clause out. I didn't realize that we're tossing that in there.
Yeah.
Representative Denise Bowles mm-hmm. was here Friday giving us a quick little update. She's like, hey, I'm there working, but with them being gone, yeah, so all of our stuff just stalled.
The Republican leader is Herman, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Bartschiger?
Close enough.
All right. He's from Grants Pass. They need to do some good work down in Grants Pass. They have a couple of good representatives down there. His quote is, my caucus and I continue to stand firm and remain out of the state. Thanks for everybody who's expressed support. So very resolute in that regard. So a couple of things. There's important things that have been passed. Funding boosts for infrastructure projects. They can't go forth. And that would include summer wildfire, money for summer wildfires and so forth. New buildings, what does it say? Federally qualified health centers or whatever that is. But anyway, money that's been allocated really can't be spent unless the Senate also votes on it.
Hmm.
The PERS reforms are going to be...
That's kind of a big one.
Yeah, it's going to be... It's controversial, but it's big, and it's going to be in limbo. According to the Salem Reporter, and I would want to flesh this out a little bit more, they say anything that doesn't pass by the end of session has to start all over again at the next session, which would mean to have to again pass the House and the Senate and whatever, had to assign to a subcommittee and go through the whole process. It can't just pick up where it left off.
Well, that's not totally a bad thing, is it?
So you got the, maybe not, yeah, the tax on tobacco products that's going to pay for healthcare goals and... And then, of course, the affordable housing through zoning. And actually, I did want to talk about that today. Hopefully, we'll get to the missing middle, as the Speaker of the House, Tina Kotek, calls it. The missing middle passing the House. And what that means for cities all over the state. So you have 29 of the 67 bills that have passed the House, right? That were sponsored by or co-sponsored by Republicans. And they're in limbo. And so that's important to the colleagues on the other side.
Sure.
And that, gosh, like, what do you do? I mean, it's a very, very tough position for those senators to be in. And I'm not telling you I have the one right answer. I know there's pretty good arguments, in fact, of the all three perspectives. Your perspective, just stay out. This is your desperation tool. You throw it. It's what you got
to
do.
And use it to compromise like they did before.
Yeah.
But get that emergency clause out of there.
Senator Cliff Bentz, he's a Republican as well, from Ontario, Oregon. He acknowledged, at least, that this is an issue, and he's concerned about them. And his quote, there are many, many bills that are still caught up in the process that would die. There's a big, huge cost to not getting these issues resolved, and we're well aware of it. And in case you're not familiar, folks, the legislature has to, they have to, shut down at the end of June. So that's in state law. When they went to annual meetings, we have a short session, a long session, that was a requirement. You couldn't go past July 30th, but it does not...
July 30th or June 30th?
June 30th, thank you. June 30th doesn't prohibit a special session, right? But this session does have to close. So the threat that the senators are putting is that we're not going to show up until July 1st, and therefore this session has to end and everything else will just die in limbo, including these 29 Republican-sponsored or co-sponsored bills and 67 bills total, that all the work has already been done in the House.
Maybe it's worth it to kill the cap-and-trade bill?
Maybe.
That's what I'm thinking.
Maybe it is. And if it's, might be worth it if they get rid of the emergency clause.
Yes.
Right.
I didn't realize they were tossing it onto all these bills. I thought every proposed tax increase had to be voted on by the voters.
No, it doesn't. They can pass. No, not at all. But they, in Oregon law, if it's a tax increase, it can be referred to. And
it should be. Every one of them
public,
should be.
You get a petitioner. So there's a petition to refer something that the legislature passed. It's a revenue item. Something that refers to the increase in revenue can be referred to the people. It needs to be filed with the next number of days of the session ending. Right. So we talked about this a little bit because I was asked to be the chief petitioner when measures, what would become measures 66 and 67 were passed by the legislature back in 2009, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2009. And so at the time, the legislature just passed it. They just passed it. And it was the largest tax increase in Oregon history, and it was the depths of the greatest recession in any of our lifetimes.
Yes, I
and
remember.
And they passed this thing. And so I signed on to be the chief petitioner, and it got referred to the ballot, and it was assigned ballot measure titles of measure 66 and 67, and we voted in January, and they prevailed. We didn't prevail in killing it. We prevailed in the taxes sticking.
Ouch.
Quite a disappointment. And a bunch of lies. And a bunch of lies. We talk about the... we should just do a regular segment called The Big Lie. What is the big lie of the week? Because the big lie for them, and it continues to be, folks, the big lie is... only rich people will pay this.
That is a big lie.
Only big corporations are going to pay this. Nobody who makes under $250,000 is going to be hurt by this bill.
Baloney.
All right. So I can't believe
a cigarette tax hurts the unemployed and the poor more than it does middle class.
And Measure 66 and 67, they did have income thresholds. But again, it was a backdoor sales tax where they're going to tax you whether or not you made money.
So I remember.
All right, folks. At the time, I owned a small business. It was losing money. But the sales were high. So guess what happened as soon as it passed? I laid off a manager. That manager didn't make $250,000, but she lost her job because of the public policy.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, I don't know, at the time, this is over 10 years ago, it was over $40,000 a year, $40,000, $50,000 a year with benefits and everything else. And I'm like, well, I can't pay the tax and pay you. So, yeah, she lost her job.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's a big lie, people. They want you to all think it's Nike and Walmart. We're only going to tax Nike and Walmart.
Yeah, right.
Do the math. Another regular segment from Brent. Yes. Do the math. All right. Dave loves cars. In his spare time, he's going to open a car shop. Yeah, not
maybe.
A shop. It's car sales. Car sales in a corner. He's going to lease some land. He's going to borrow some money from relatives and the bank. He's going to lay it out there, become a small business person, entrepreneur. Then he's going to sell these $10,000 used cars. Right?
Okay.
So what's a high volume, folks? So you listen, you count it. Let's do the math. Dave's going to sell 10 cars for $10,000. 10 cars in a month. That means every... 3 days he sells one car.
Right.
This is not a big operation. He's sweating to make his bills. He's got to pay for the lights. He's got to pay for his insurance. He's got to pay for the financing and the lease and everything else. And he's selling 10 cars a month, and it's $10,000 a car for these used cars. Is he rich? No. You know what that is, folks? That's over $1 million of sales in a year. He's suddenly subject to the new tax that they just passed. Dave Bourne with his corner car lot. 10 cars, $10,000. That's $100,000. That's $1.2 million, Dave, and you are the filthy rich because your sales exceed $1 million. And so they need to tack on an additional corporate activities tax on you.
And how much is that tax?
Is that Nike, folks? It's 0.57% of sales.
Ouch.
Is that? Yeah, it's 0.5% of sales. Over
that's half
over,
a million,
over,
isn't
over,
it?
Over, no, no, 0.57 of sales, 0.57% of sales over a million. Whatever it is, you shouldn't have to pay a corporate activities tax that they claim and they're trying to shove down the throats of Oregonians of something that's only going to tax big corporations. And you know what? Dave didn't even incorporate. It's just him and his wife, and they own this as a mom-and-pop sole proprietorship. They didn't even incorporate. They don't even enjoy any benefits of, you know, you get lowered liability and all these other taxation things. So you didn't even do that. You're just literally a mom-and-pop sole proprietor, and you can sell $1 million and be a tiny business. Oregon, wake up. You could be a tiny business and reach this threshold. And sorry, maybe David doesn't even make it because he can't work 7 days a week. He has to hire help. The whole nine yards. You can be a very small company and reach that threshold and be taxed in this corporate activities. And you know what he's going to be forced to do? He's going to sell you that $10,000 car and say, here it is. Here's title, license fees, and here is the corporate activities tax because you have to pay it.
Right. And I'll pass it on.
Every car dealer, folks, if you're going to buy a car, I don't know. Does that one have an emergency? That's going to have to be a line item. I talked to two people. I think I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago before I was gone last week. Two people that are commercial builders, right? Contractors. Mm-hmm. And they shrugged. It's like, I don't know what we're going to do about that. But my plan is I'm going to have to make it a line item because this cost of materials, this cost of labor, this cost of this and that. I'm like, it is what it is. I'm not just going to eat the 0.57% because the margins aren't that big. I'm just going to say this is the bid and you're going to pay an additional 0.57. One of them even said, oh, I'm going to put 5.7. I'm going to put 5.7 plus some factor for me to administer collecting the taxes on behalf of the state.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
Don't be fooled, folks. Those people who are hiring the contractors and the people who are buying the cars, we're all paying the tax. All right, this is Newsmakers. This is Brent for Dave on 1430 KYKN. Stick with us. We've got more coming. Salem's listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. Great to have you here with us on a beautiful day to live in the Mid-Willamette Valley. I woke up yesterday morning in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Sounds like a beginning of a book.
Yesterday, I woke up in Pittsburgh and wondered why. And I was surprised, I was telling Dave during the break, it was actually a very, very nice job along the waterfront. The three cities we visited last week, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, and Cleveland, are all on water, of course. Cities were founded back then on waterways. And they've done a really nice job with the waterfront and walkways and museums and things that are related to tourism, ballparks, and so forth. And my son's comment was, wow, these cities are really putting Portland to shame.
Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting perspective. He didn't think much of what, I mean, Portland has its attractions and there's some cool things about the waterfront, but compared to what Pittsburgh and Cincinnati and Cleveland have done, in his perspective, it really puts Portland to shame considering what is possible out there. And so in Pittsburgh, I apologize to all you Pittsburgh people out there that I had this perspective, an old Rust Belt town that was a somewhat industrial in nature and I don't know. I'm not that attractive. I wouldn't put it high on my list. You know,
right.
like you think of the beauty of San Francisco or the beaches of Miami, and then you go to Pittsburgh. They did great stuff along the waterfront. I mean, really cool stuff. I mean, we're staying very close to the stadium, very close, like a block.
Wow.
You could walk. And on the other side of us is the other stadium. So you've got the Steeler Stadium and PNC Park for the Pirates. And then on the other side, you've got the Carnegie Science Museum facility. It looked like a great place to be. On the other side of that, there was like a concert venue, an outdoor concert venue. And the other side of that was a casino with an outdoor amphitheater sitting area. And there's boats going up and down the river. And you could cross these bridges and go into very large parks on the other side. And yeah, it did a nice job. So kudos to Pittsburgh, and I apologize for my preconceived, less than favorable notions.
Nice.
Anyway, all right, back to politics. Let's swing it back home here in Oregon. A couple interesting things happened in the legislature. They're talking about maybe limiting the number of bills that each legislator can submit. Now, they do this already in the short session, right? Every other year, in the odd, on the even-numbered years, it's just February, and they limit it to one bill per House member and two per senator. Okay, so they've already been doing that, and they're talking about maybe lessen the workload, maybe more things would get more deeply fleshed out and become more public and have more public hearings if there were fewer bills in general. In average, they're doing about 2,700 bills in
That's
a long
a
session.
That's a lot.
2,700 bills. In the last two sessions, they've averaged about 30% of them becoming law.
Did they take any amount of there?
How many removed laws? I don't think so. So, yeah. So 30% of them. So, but still, you're talking about 800, right? New laws every other year.
That's ridiculous.
Not to count the short session, more than 800.
For every new law that gets passed, they need to take three out. That should be a law.
Oh, day born for a state legislator.
Yeah.
That's what he'll do. Anyway, interesting discussion. I can't say it's a bad idea. I mean, there are a lot of people, they get bills introduced that are just harebrained. We talked about a few of those earlier this year.
Every year.
Just harebrained, but you know that the legislator did this as a favor for somebody who did a campaign contribution or supported them or they're the friend or, you know, whatever it is. I'll do this as a favor and I'll introduce this bill, even though they know it's not going to go anywhere. So, but they think that people have, you know, they should have the opportunity to get it introduced and advocate for it, even if they think it's going to die. Anyway, it might be good public policy. I don't know. It certainly works for the short session, I would think, and where they can get down, because the short session is supposed to all be about budget.
Right.
So every year they can look at what's happened in the last few quarters of economic activity. Are we going to have the income that we anticipated for the biennium and blah, blah. It's supposed to be about being a closer watchdog on the budget and so forth. And a limited number of essential public policy changes, which maybe next February we'll be talking about cap and trade, right?
Oh, geez.
If it doesn't pass now. All right. I mentioned it before the break. Real quick, the missing middle. Tina Kotek, it's one of her priorities. We talked a little bit about this land use thing where multifamily housing be allowed in single family zones. They're telling the cities you need to allow some of this. You need to allow duplex, triplexes, quadplexes in single family. And the intent is to get more density, which leads to more available housing and then more available lower cost housing. Right, because it's going to cost less to have a townhouse than it is a single family home with a yard. It's going to cost less to have a quadplex and so forth. So House Bill 2001 could become law in July, and cities with more than 10,000 residents. Folks, that's the size of Monmouth, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of cities. Dallas is, what, 15,000? So Independence, well, the sign says just under 10,000, but it might be dated. So they'll have to allow a duplex on any lot that's now limited to single-family house. So that's one of the land use things, folks, that are coming out of the legislature is likely to just move forward and become law. So I'm really surprised. Two-thirds of Oregon's homes are single-family houses. That's a pretty good ratio.
That's good.
But you know, single-family houses are really expensive. Hey, thanks for being with us today. We're going to do this again tomorrow and hopefully talk to the mayor, right?
Yes.
You're listening to Newsmakers. I'm Brent DeHart. That's Dave Bourne, and this is 1430 KYKN.
And we'll see you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.